Now, depending on how you look at it, America's total debt is equal to more than 90% of our total economic output. That's the highest level of debt since the end of the Second World War. But it's not the highest level in the world. Japan's public debt, for example, is more than twice as big as its annual income. Still, according to Ken Rogoff, a former chief economist at the IMF and now a professor at Harvard, once an economy crosses 90%, it's a dangerous place to be. He and his colleague, economist Carmen Reinhart, looked at the financial history of 44 countries over the past 200 years, and they found that in many cases, once a country hits that 90% level, there's a good chance its economy will begin to suffer.
There's no hard and fast number, but 90% seems to be a useful threshold where, when you're an advanced economy like the United States, the United Kingdom, France, Germany, when you get above that level, it starts to hit your growth. Remarkably lower than that, it's not so obvious that it affects your growth, although I must say much more research remains to be done. But when you start getting over 90%, on average over the last couple hundred years, that's been associated with 1% lower growth. Now, that may not seem like a crisis, but it really can add up. That's a lot of money.
Now, obviously, we're talking about this in the context of the United States as a debt-to-GDP ratio exceeding 90%, total debt of, mm-hmm. of the United States. So that's a problem based on the data that you've gathered, right?
Yes. The United States is certainly up at a high debt level. In fact, if you add in state and local debt, and that's sort of reasonable to do to look at the whole government system, it's higher than it's ever been. It's even higher than at the end of World War II. And I think even more worrisome is, at least up to this point, there's been no conspicuous political will to rein it in. The deficits explode, and that's not even counting Social Security, Medicare, these old age programs that aren't factored into the debt level. So I think we certainly have reached a worrisome level. We're not at a crisis level. We are, after all, the United States. But I do think we've reached a point where we do need some kind of idea of how we're reining it in over the next 5 to 10 years in a firm and credible way.
So if we are approaching, let's say, a crisis point, you would say that you could understand some of these legislators, these lawmakers on Capitol Hill who say, I will not vote to raise a debt ceiling under any circumstance. We have got to take care of this now.
I'm not very sympathetic to that. I mean, it's really like a completely artificial crisis. We certainly don't want to default just for the heck of it. We don't want to default to say, well, we're worried about 10 or 15 years from now, so we're going to default now. I don't think creditors are going to feel a lot better about that.
Would you argue that we need to tackle the debt issue right now, immediately, even at the risk of slowing down the economy temporarily?
Well, I think we need to approach the problem holistically. First of all, no, we can't dramatically bring down our deficit because tax revenues are very low because of the recession, and we need to do things fairly gradually to look at the long picture. But there's certainly a lot of things we can do. Of course, spending exploded with the fiscal stimulus, and there's ideas to rein that in. But also, we need to improve our tax system. It's really a mess. It's incredibly complicated. Rates are low, and yet there are all kinds of loopholes and ways to get around things that really need to be removed. And we could get a more efficient tax system and, frankly, collect more revenues with less harm to the economy than we have now.
That's Ken Rogoff. He's a professor of economics at Harvard University. His most recent book is called This Time is Different: 8 Centuries of Financial Folly. That was co-written with Carmen Reinhart. Ken Rogoff, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The quest for a compromise to raise the debt ceiling appears to have come down to the nation's top Democrat and top Republican huddling in private. But with only 11 days left to prevent an unprecedented debt default, neither President Obama nor House Speaker John Boehner gave any indication today that a deal is at hand. And with the clock ticking closer to the August 2nd deadline, NPR's David Wellner reports on the growing uncertainty and anxiety among lawmakers.
The race for a solution to the debt limit crisis moved a bit closer to an endgame today as the Democratic-run Senate shelved a Tea Party-backed measure passed by House Republicans earlier this week. Known as Cut, Cap, and Balance, it made lifting the debt ceiling contingent on Congress passing a constitutional amendment to balance the budget. The bill faced a veto threat from the White House, and rather than allow a debate on it to proceed until tomorrow as planned, Majority Leader Harry Reid led Democrats in killing the measure.
There is simply no more time to waste debating and voting on measures that have no hopes of becoming law. We have no more time to waste playing partisan games.
Meanwhile, in another part of the Capitol, House Speaker John Boehner was being pressed by reporters on whether he and President Obama had reached a reported $3 trillion deficit reduction deal to raise the debt ceiling.
I'm going to say it one more time. There was no agreement, publicly, privately, never an agreement, and frankly, not close to an agreement. I would suggest that it's going to be a hot weekend here in Washington, D.C.
Boehner had just come from a closed-door meeting with fellow House Republicans. Minnesota freshman Chip Kravach said Boehner assured them there's been no discussion whatsoever in any negotiations he's been involved in of raising taxes.
Speaker Boehner's been very clear there will be no tax increases on anything. So that's where I am as well. I mean, that's what people in the 8th District are telling me. They're saying we're taxing up.
Congressional Democrats have been adamant that new tax revenues have to be part of any deficit reduction deal. This morning, President Obama told a town hall meeting at the University of Maryland that he's willing to sign a plan that includes tough choices he would not normally make, but then added a caveat.
There are going to be a certain set of equities that we're not willing to sacrifice. And I've said we have to have revenue as part of the package.
Yesterday, a meeting of Senate Democrats with White House Budget Director Jack Lew exploded in fury in response to news reports that the deficit reduction deal might do only spending cuts now and leave revenue increases for later. West Virginia Democrat Jay Rockefeller was there.
I've never been in such an intense, high-octane meeting in my life.
I don't lose my cool. I lost it yesterday in the caucus.
That's California Democrat Dianne Feinstein.
You have to know that revenues are going to be part of it. In other words, X amount will be revenues or there is no agreement.
Majority Leader Reid admitted today he does not know much about what President Obama and Speaker Boehner are discussing.
I say as sincerely as I can, I wish them well. It's extremely important we address the debt. And it's extremely important that we understand we're no longer talking about credit ratings. We're talking about the default of our debt.
Reid said by law, any deficit reduction deal that involves taxes has to be dealt with first by the House. But many House Republicans absolutely oppose new taxes. And many, including South Carolina's Tim Scott, question whether the debt ceiling even needs to be raised.
I think the reality of it is there's just no possible way that the American government defaults on its debt because we have plenty of revenue coming in without the increase.
And that attitude may explain why it's been so hard for Speaker Boehner to find a deal his own party, as well as Democrats, can vote for. David Wellner, NPR News, the Capitol.
Here are the results from a big nationwide auto race. Last month, the Nissan Leaf pulled ahead of the Chevy Volt. In the first half of this year, Nissan sold 4,134 Leafs in the U.S. Chevy sold 2,745 Volts. Just as a basis for comparison, during the same 6 months, Toyota sold 147,469 Camrys. In fairness, the competition among the Volt, the Leaf, and the Tesla Roadster is supposed to be a race among tortoises. The finish line is somewhere in the future when plug-in electrics might wean us off our national petroleum habit. But we thought we'd check back to see if those modest sales figures are seen as encouraging. And joining us is Jerry Hirsch, an automotive industry reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Do automakers look at those numbers and say, yes, it's coming along, or this is a very slow market?
They say it's coming along. They can actually sell about as many as they could produce. What's probably holding the market back at this point is that Nissan and Chevrolet are ramping up production of those vehicles. So it's going to take some time to get to the point where they can make more than the market can absorb.
The Chevy Volt is a more expensive car, the Nissan Leaf. Are people springing for $40,000? Of course, they get a tax rebate in there, but are they spending that much and why?
Well, there is a huge passion among some people in the United States for electric vehicles. And the automakers could probably sell 50,000, 70,000 vehicles at these prices just because these individuals believe that electric vehicles are the future. They have environmental views that make them think that this is the best way of going from point A to point B. The big question is what happens when the incentives fall off? What happens when there's more entrants into the market, as there will be later this year and next year? Then we're really going to see how big is the market for electrical vehicles in the United States.
And I gather, by the way, one other spur to the market is that an electric car, or for that matter, a hybrid, is a ticket to the high-occupancy vehicle lane on the highway, so it can get you where you're going faster.
In California right now, it's actually just an electric vehicle or a zero or a low-emissions vehicle like a natural gas vehicle. Interestingly, the Volt does not qualify to get either the special rebate for electric vehicles in California or a California carpool lane permit. They're doing some re-engineering of that vehicle, and probably mid-2012 model year, it will qualify for those benefits.
Well, what's the outlook, say, for next year in terms of new competition in the electric vehicle market?
Well, one of the vehicles that I'm really watching is the Toyota RAV4 Electric. What's interesting about this is a car that they've developed jointly with Tesla, and it has some qualities and characteristics that may make it attractive to buyers. One, it's a small SUV, so you're going to be able to haul more stuff in it. Two, it's expected to have a little bigger range. The Volt, for practical terms, you can get 40, maybe 45 miles. The Leaf, the best I've ever done with a single charge on a Leaf is about 78 miles. But the RAV4 has the potential to have a longer range because Tesla uses a little different battery system than these other manufacturers. So if they could bring this in at about the same price point, and we don't know that yet, it may grab sales from some of the existing vehicles just because it's a bigger vehicle with a larger range. And I think consumers are going to like that.
Jerry Hirsch of the Los Angeles Times, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. President Obama got out of town this morning, but not too far. He held a town hall meeting in College Park, Maryland, just over the line from Washington, D.C., and he was home in time for lunch. Still, it was his first public event outside of Washington in almost a month. As NPR's Ari Shapiro reports, it was one more effort to get the public involved in the debt ceiling debate, and this part of the public was pretty friendly.
President Obama often begins his roadshow by saying how good it is to leave Washington.
Don't get me wrong. There's nothing I enjoy more than sitting hour after hour, day after day, debating the fine points of the federal budget with members of Congress.
Those debates may be over soon, whether the president likes it or not. The deadline for raising the debt ceiling and avoiding default is just a week and a half away.
It is not an option for us to default. My challenge then is I've got to get something passed. I've got to get 218 votes in the House of Representatives.
The holdup is exactly the same as it was when these talks began. Republicans insist on deficit reductions in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. President Obama says those reductions cannot come through spending cuts alone. He wants to end subsidies, loopholes, and tax breaks for the wealthy. To Republicans, that's a tax hike, and many of them have taken an oath not to raise taxes. President Obama said he's willing to slay some of his own party's sacred cows, and Republicans should do the same.
The easiest thing for a politician to do is to give you more stuff and ask less in return. It's a lot harder to say, we got to cut back on what you're getting, and you got to pay a little more.
He said a mix of cuts and taxes is not some wild-eyed socialist proposition.
It's a position that's been taken by every Democratic and Republican president who've signed major deficit deals in the past, from Ronald Reagan to Bill Clinton.
polls show it's a position supported by a majority of Americans, including Republicans. 22-year-old Steve Glickman is a graduate student at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy. He's a Republican, and before the president spoke, Glickman said he's ready to see his party bend on the policy of not raising taxes.
It's a great policy, but I'm not sure in the current economy that we're in that it's sustainable. And unfortunately, I think the Republicans need to face more of the realities and give in on certain cuts.
Many in this mostly college-aged audience expressed frustration that the grown-ups might not finish their homework on time. 22-year-old Andy McCracken just graduated from American University.
More than anything, we want to make sure that we're not just kicking the can down the road, because in this situation, we are that can, and we're trying to kick back.
McCracken is leading a group of 120 student body presidents who are urging national leaders to reach a compromise and think big.
When we're in college, we can't get extensions from our professors on papers, so we're hoping that the U.S. government doesn't try to get an extension on something as important as this debt ceiling.
President Obama has said he would sign an extension of a few days, but only if Congress has agreed to a broader deal in principle. Heading into the weekend, there is no sign of such a deal, and lawmakers have gone home. But they return next week with the final exam looming, and it might be time to start pulling all-nighters. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, Washington.